Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this marvelous, wonderful network known as Blog Talk Radio, as we're still gripped in ice and snow here in the Midwest, and hopefully everyone will have a nice place to enjoy tonight's program because we have a fantastic guest. We should call this part two because we had him on about a month ago, Bobby Caldwell, drummer for Johnny Winter, Allman Brothers, Captain Beyond. He's back, and I'll tell you, he's a regular rock and roll historian. He's got so many amazing stories. We had to have him back on just as quickly as possible. And we'll be talking tonight, Allman Brothers, Johnny Winter, Captain Beyond, it's all here. And, of course, as always, handling the technical responsibilities for our show, Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. Our musical editor from RadioMom.fm, Jim Johnson, and from the massive Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
Well, it's still cold here.
It's snowing right here, right now, at the moment.
I know. I'm ready for winter to be over, as I've said for the last 2 or 3 weeks. But what can we do? We still have February and parts of March. So hopefully we'll have lots of great shows coming up. I know that we do. Next week, I should mention very quickly, David Klinger with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's a senior writer for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's written some fantastic articles behind the scenes with the Fish and Wildlife Service. One article in particular involved a rather well-known family, the Charles Manson family, and they had what they had, well, how should I put this? They had a kill list. And 7 or 8 property managers for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service were on that kill list. Lots of stuff to talk about next week, but David Klinger from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will be here, and we're very excited about that. As always, taking care of the Wild World News, and this is underwritten by Jet Kaiser Films, Dr. Henry Day. What do you got for us tonight, Doctor?
Well, I want all you gentlemen out there to listen to this story. Pay attention. Your pet or your sweetheart, as much as we love our pets, a new APPetSide.com poll finds that most people, 84%, would hold on to their spouse or their significant other over their pets. But a sizable 14% pick their pet. Now, women are more likely than men to say the human pet choice would be a tough one. 40% among the women compared with only 26% among the men. Now,
well,
you,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
You have a pet name for your wife.
Yes.
And
why would you bring that up, Dr. Day?
Well, just what is your wife's pet name? Or are we going to get in trouble?
Well, I might. I call this with a lot of love involved with it. The bipedal wolverine.
Right.
So why did you have me say that?
Either way you go.
If I what?
Either way.
Right, well, whatever. Well, I've got 6 tigers, so I'm going to tell you right now. That's why we have 6 tigers, because my wife loves the tigers more than me. And I know on the line, Bobby Caldwell here, he's quite the pet lover. Bobby, would it be either your pets or you, as far as your wife's concerned?
Well, of course, this is always a difficult one. Quite possibly could be me, actually.
That's what I thought.
It depends on how I'm doing that day, how things are around the house, you know.
Gotcha.
Okay. It's the same way here.
Thanks for your input, Bobby. That was just made my point. All right, Doctor. Sorry.
All right. Here's a follow-up to a story that we did a couple of weeks ago. Fairbanks, Alaska. State biologists may use a stun gun to incapacitate a moose to remove the rope that it that they used to pull it from the Chena River after it fell through the ice. Now, at the time, the moose took off before they could remove the rope. Now, the Fairbanks Daily News reports that the device will not harm the moose.
What device, the rope or the stun gun?
The stun gun.
Oh, that doesn't seem like a very good way to do that. And, you know, whenever you, as we put it in the animal business, knock an animal down, in other words, give it some sort of anesthetic, that's always very risky. And you have to be very precise on your dosages. And when you get wild animals involved, it's very difficult. So that'll be interesting. You'll have to do a follow-up on that and see how they did. I hope the best for them, though.
Right. That'd be a hard thing to kind of practice on, wouldn't it?
There's no practice involved. I'll tell you that right now. I've been in those situations. There's no practice. It's a big guessing game.
All right. Well, we got some good news from St. Louis, Missouri. The zoo is celebrating the birth of a black rhino. The 120-pound calf born January 14th is the first black rhino born at the zoo in 20 years. Zoo staff are still trying to come up with a name for the little guy. The calf is feeding well and bonding with his parents in a barn, and the public are going to have to wait until the weather warms up a little bit to see the new baby.
Well, that'll be exciting. That'll be a good reason to go to the zoo enjoying the warm summer spring day. Go see the baby rhino. What an opportunity for young people. You know, we've had several stories. And zoos have had a great success breeding black rhinos, so that's tremendous news because they're very, very endangered.
That's right. Okay, now, I know that you have a baby olive baboon named Elizabeth who likes to help you with your landscaping chores.
Yes. She pulls weeds.
Well, they could use her in Mesa, Arizona.
Uh-oh.
The city is using goats and sheep to remove weeds and invasive tree species from rocky, steep embankments at a water recycling plant. They will turn loose the sheep on 30 acres, and they'll be visible for about 6 months to the morning commuters on the Red Mountain Freeway stretch of Loop 202 west of Dobson Road.
Well, that's a very good idea. That's an old farmer's trick. You know, they used to put a few goats or sheep out in the pasture to clean out the fence rows. So that's a great idea. And not an expensive solution either.
No, the goats get fed and
yep.
The grass gets cut.
You know, you might a job there, Henry, or I mean a business, I should say. Rent a goat. For all the people that don't like to mow their yard, you could just take your goat to their yard and let them borrow it for a couple days.
And then we'd have to have somebody to clean up after them.
Oh, no, it's built-in fertilizer. Not only is it trimming one's lawn, it's also fertilizing it at the same time. Marketing, Dr. Day, marketing.
Marketing, gotcha.
Okay.
All right, now, at the Bats and Wildlife Preserve, I know that you have wolves, but you don't have to use a plane to count them, do you?
No, it's not hard. I can walk out this door and count two at any time.
Yeah, and sometimes they're right next to you in the house.
That's right. Sometimes they're right in here as we make this broadcast each week.
All right. Well, Silver City, New Mexico, the annual count of the Mexican gray wolves along the border with Arizona has begun. But the biologists there, they're using aircraft to find the wolves fitted with radio telemetry collars. Now, the count at the start of 2010 was 42.
Mm-hmm.
But here's an interesting thing. The government began releasing the endangered wolves to the wild in 1998. Now, I know the gray wolf has a gestation period of about 63 days, and I would think there'd be a lot more, wolves countable up, you know.
Well, it all depends on the food supply, and there are a larger number of wolves in the wild where there's more food for them to eat. So if there's not as much food available to them, they have smaller litters. And that's also true with coyotes. So when everybody complains, I see coyotes everywhere. Well, they're here because there's a food supply. So that's not hard to figure out at all.
Very good point.
Yes. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, we're off to West Palm Beach, Florida. Well, we're reporting on the turtles. We love the turtles, and we're hoping we can help them out here. The National Wildlife Federation, the Sea Turtle Conservancy, and the Florida Wildlife Federation are urging lawmakers to take steps to protect the sea turtles. They said funding must be upheld for beach conservation, and they should limit construction along the ecologically important coastlines and have to deal with the climate change, the temperature change. They say it must be addressed. And I'm not sure how they can handle that, but they're doing their best to help these little guys out.
Well, we're going to have on Donna Shaver from Padre Island, Texas this spring, and that's when that'll be going on. The collection, hatching, and release of Ridley sea turtles, and that'll be happening. She's going to be on in March, so we're going to hear all the latest on that.
She'll be able to fill us in.
That's right.
Okay, well, they love their oysters in Mobile, Alabama. Listen to this. Volunteers this Saturday will place 23,000 bags of oyster shells just off the Mobile Bay shoreline at Helen Wood Park, creating a quarter mile of reefs. The goal is to create 100 miles of oyster reefs and 1,000 acres of marsh. The Restore Coastal Alabama Partnership calls the bay one of the largest potential areas for restoration of lost habitats. Now, with all these oyster shells, aren't there going to be a whole lot of lemon rinds, too? What can they do with those?
You have a point there. That's a lot of oysters.
That's a lot of lemon rinds, too.
That's true.
Okay, now you'll have to pay attention to this. Kudos for the beastness.
For the beastness, what?
B-E-A-S-T, beastness.
Yeah.
Waynesboro, Virginia. The Wildlife Center of Virginia said it has treated 22,300 animals this last year, down from 25,000 in 2009, taking care of the critters. Birds accounted for more than 1,000 of the admissions, everything from screech owls to bald eagles and yellow-bellied sapsuckers. The center also treated an alligator found during a drug raid and a poor little rat snake that swallowed a wooden egg.
Oh, that'd be hard to digest for the rat snake, because they'll swallow eggs, but if it's wooden, they're in trouble.
Yeah, a wooden egg. Yeah, splinters.
Yeah.
All right, I've got a brand new word for you.
Okay.
Invasivore.
Oh, that is.
And after I report this story, you'll understand a little more about it. Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Chef Jimmy Wade plans an invasivore dinner menu in February at the Heaven City restaurant. On the menu, carp. We're going to be serving carp cakes, smoked carp steak,
yum,
and carp Napoleon, featuring the invasive Asian carp from the Illinois River that threatened to breach the Great Lakes. Now, their slogan is, if you can't beat them, eat them.
Well, you know, if it's prepared properly, and I've had it before, carp is quite tasty if you do enjoy fish and seafood. So,
it has to be prepared properly. I agree.
Yeah. So that's our wild world news
for tonight.
Fantastic. Using an artistic modern style, Jet Kaiser Film produces affordable wedding videos that are as unique as the couples that star in them. Check out his website, Jet Kaiser, K-A-I-S-E-R, films.com. Also, a big thank you to RadioMom.fm, in the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And listen to my show, that's right, Larry the Animal Guy, the 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Those are some of our underwriters. They make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
I was born in a crossfire hurricane.
amazing Bobby Caldwell joins us tonight. The backbeat behind Captain Beyond. Gosh, that drumming on that song is fantastic. Rick Derringer, Johnny Winter, all the way from his home in Florida. This is part two with Bobby Caldwell. Good evening, Bobby.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Man, that Captain Beyond song. Unbelievable. Raging River of Fear, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's the one, yeah.
Wow. Very impressive.
Yeah, you can't listen to that before bedtime.
Wow, that was great. And, of course, the Johnny Winter, we're going to talk about it all tonight. I've gotten so much response this week when I announced that you were going to be on the show again because after the conversation on the Blog Talk show, and we talked a little bit after that, I thought, man, we haven't hardly scratched the surface with Bobby Caldwell. I mean, I think what blew me away more than anything was the story that you told me about the late, great Jimi Hendrix and what the plans were before he had passed away.
Right.
Would you mind talking about that tonight?
My involvement, potential involvement with Jimmy, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what happened was we were, of course, Johnny and the band, Johnny Winter And, was based out of New York, and there was a gentleman that was our sort of gopher and picked people up at the airport and so on and so forth. And he also worked for Jimmy.
Mm.
And Jimmy at the time was living down in the Village, I think on 13th Street. And one day he picked me up from the airport, and his name was Jack, and later became the late Buddy Miles' manager. And so Jack picked me up, and we were talking. He says, well, you know, he said, there's some kind of a problem where Jimmy's thinking about, changing drummers. And I said, why? And he said, well, it's just something between him and I guess Mitch. And so he said, you know, I told him about you. And he said, I really think you would do really well together. And so when we got to the hotel where I was staying, he called him. And he said, I just picked up Bobby Caldwell, whatever the deal was. And he said, to get you guys together. And Jimmy said, well, I've got to go to Europe for a couple of weeks. And he said, when I get back, you know, we'll get together. Tell him that we'll get together down at Electric Ladyland and play a little bit and so on. And unfortunately, he never returned, but that's what happened.
Well, you know, that is not only losing Jimi Hendrix, but that is so unfortunate that that did not happen. Because I always, now this is my own personal opinion, but I always thought if he would have had a stronger rhythm section behind him, wow. And after listening to those Captain Beyond tracks, I thought that would have been amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, I always felt that Mitch was a great drummer. I mean, he was a drummer that I have always held in very high regard. And I must admit, I was a little bit, I was pleased that there might be a possibility, even if I hadn't got it, just to be able to sit down and play with him for a while would have been, sheer delight. So
right.
It was fine either way. So, yeah.
Well, it's I also had read, and you may have known this as well, that he was planning on doing some collaborative work with Miles Davis, which would have been a very interesting
That would have been interesting.
Partnership.
That would have been very interesting. Yeah.
So, Bobby.
I don't know.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, I don't know how that would, turned out, but it would be, it'd be an interesting concept, you know.
Well, you know, for years you've played with another amazing guitar player, Johnny Winter, and I know that had to be just, every night had to be quite the thrill to play with such amazing talent. You've told this story before, but for the listeners that missed our program the last time, how did that all come together, Bobby Caldwell with Johnny Winter?
How did I join up with Johnny?
Yes, sir.
There was a gentleman who called me who worked for me in a band from Florida that I was in. And I was at home practicing, and he called me up and he said, hey, he said, how would you like to come down and jam with Johnny Winter? And this was at 5 minutes from where I lived. This was at a your neighborhood type thing. And I said, I don't know. I'm not real big, Larry, on jam sessions per se, and I remember saying, no thanks, you know, I appreciate it, but I don't think I really want to. And so he kept me on the phone, and so we talked some more. And so we're talking, and he's asking about how's this, you know, I hear about this, and how's this going. So, and he finally would come back around to asking me again. So he asked me again. I said, you know, Dave, I just don't think I'm interested. So we talk some more, and finally he gets back around to asking me again, will I come down? So for some reason, this time that he asked me, there was like this voice going off and it said, you know, you need to just go down there, just whatever. So I relented. I said, all right, I'll come over. So I went over, and there's all these people that I've known, you know, from this area where I was raised, standing in the front yard and standing leaning against their cars and smoking a cigarette and talking. And I see these people coming in and out, and I hear all this music going on in this house. And I'm standing out there, mind you, it's summertime, so it's, you know, it's hot.
Florida.
I'm standing around, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, so the time's going by, and I saw Dave, and I said, Dave, how much longer do you think it'll be? Oh, I don't know, it won't be too long. So I stand around a little bit longer, and mind you, it's getting later and later and later, you know, and finally I'm thinking, man, I'm going to get out of here. I mean, I don't care that much. I mean, I'd rather go pick up my girlfriend and go out or do something, you know. And so finally he says, oh, Bobby, they want you to come in and play now, you know. And so I said, okay. So I walked in, and we all sort of shook hands. I said, hi, you know, whatever. And I sat down on this drum set that was there. And Edgar was standing there. Johnny was standing there. Rick Derringer was there. Randy Hobbs from the McCoys was there. And Steve Paul, the manager, the late Teddy Slatus, the road manager, was there, and some of the road crew. So it was a full house.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started playing this sort of really high-velocity sort of Tony Williams type of pattern. And they all just joined in. So they joined in, and we all played for 30 minutes. And nobody knew what they were doing. Nobody knew what we were playing. We just jammed. I mean, literally. And so we at the very end of the thing, we finally come to a crashing halt, thank God, you know, because you never know where it's going to land at the end.
Right.
So Johnny looks over at me and he says, can you travel? And I said, why, of course. I mean, he didn't know how much traveling I'd already done prior to that afternoon, mm-hmm. trying to get a break. And he says, well, I want you to be in my band.
Wow.
And then Edgar from across the room says, well, I want him to be in my band. And that's exactly what happened. And so I kind of sat there, you know, saying, okay, you know, what's happening? Because it all started coming to me that this wasn't a jam session at all. The whole thing was an audition. And so that's why the people kept coming in and out prior to me. I thought they were just going in to have a friendly jam.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all started making sense. And that's what happened. And you know, a couple of weeks later, I think it took a couple of weeks before we actually started playing our first shows, because Edgar was kind of playing drums, wearing these medical examining gloves, and Edgar would play drums, and that was it. And about 2 weeks later, we started playing together, and then we went to a big south of France for a big festival down there at the south of France, and that's where it started, really.
The first gigs you did with Johnny were in the south of France.
No. Well, the first gigs we did were in Florida.
Oh, okay.
But the curious part, Larry, was
mm-hmm.
that the part of it was all in Tampa. It was in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I had been playing out of with this band I was in, Noah's Ark, for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just pretty bizarre that the first night you walk out there, you're playing almost to your home crowd. It was really very eerie.
I bet.
I mean, I looked down and I saw everybody that I used to see, you know, at all the shows and dances and stuff that I'd been playing for years. There they were. You know, it was really weird.
It had to be a proud moment.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, and then is when we went to Europe and did that stuff down there, and that's where it really started. You know, you started realizing, okay, well, now we're cooking some bigger fish here, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to drummer Bobby Caldwell of Captain Beyond, Rick Derringer, Johnny Winter fame. How long did it take? I have the feeling, and I could be completely wrong, that there wasn't a lot of rehearsal. I mean, you guys probably melted together pretty quickly.
No, there wasn't. In order to, because as I said, they were looking for a drummer,
mm-hmm.
and unbeknownst to me, so it was almost like, you know, get on the train and we'll teach you what songs we're going to do, kind of thing. So there really wasn't much preparation at all. I mean, you know, I knew some of the stuff that they gave me to learn,
mm-hmm.
and it was baptism by fire, let me tell you.
Well, isn't that the best?
I suppose.
I mean, if you can do that, then nothing will ever catch you off guard forever.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're in that situation, you have no choice. It's it's sink or swim. I mean, and, you know, you can't stop and say, oh, hang on a second. Let's see, how many people are out there tonight? 10,000? We haven't really been rehearsing too much, so just bear with us a minute. You know what I'm saying? You can't do that. It's like, let it go and really pray that it all turns out, you know.
Well, it was I tell you what, the Johnny Winter and band was a fantastic ride. I enjoyed everything that you guys did, and it was, and what a character Johnny Winter is. I mean, that is one of the performers in my lifetime that I did not have the opportunity to see in concert, and I regret it to this day.
Yeah, Johnny is he's one of the greats, and I am thrilled to have played with him and know him as a friend. And I always tell people about Johnny, and if he hears this broadcast, that he's a great singer.
He is.
I'm telling you now, he is a great singer. I mean, it may be a little smoother around the edges and this and that and this and that, you know, but he's got a voice to be reckoned with, and I've heard him sing. I may have said this to you, some ballads before that you just wouldn't believe you wouldn't believe it's the same person growling out the blues. I mean, he does such a spectacular job, truly.
And what makes a great singer is he sings two notes, and you know exactly who it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. Let's face it, that's what makes them great. We're with Bobby Caldwell tonight on Larry Batson's Wild World. We want to thank Peter and Kathy Weimer at We Want You Cottages, a fantastic resort on Chautauqua Lake. And their addition to their website, iKids Fishing, promoting youngsters interested in fishing. That website is www.wewantyou.com. We're going to be back in just a few moments with drummer Bobby Caldwell, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Take me fishing and show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We want to remind everyone that we are supported by our underwriters, such as Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline, fantastic fishing, amazing golf courses. Go to their website, www.santeecoopercountry.org. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, future home of Bobby Caldwell, I was told, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. That's God's country, everybody. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And also Harrison College, now offering veterinarian technician courses. If you love animals and people, this might be a great career path. Their website, www.harrison.edu, or call for info at 1-888-544-4422. Our guest tonight, rock and roll legend Bobby Caldwell's here tonight. And Bobby, we had discussed something after the show which I found quite extraordinary. I guess one of the members of your Captain Beyond group was also with the Iron Butterfly.
Two of them were.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Rhino and Lee Dorman both had. Lee Dorman had actually been with the Butterfly from pretty much its inception, not from the very beginning, but Lee had been playing with them, you know, from the early days out of San Diego, and Rhino had been with them. In the late 60s, he joined.
Well, they were a big band in their era.
Huge.
Huge. And they might have been, and you had told me something remarkable about them. The album, Inagata De Vida, well, you tell the story.
Well, there's two things I'll tell you about Inagata De Vida that the listeners may not know. That at the time, Gold records were the only standard for awards to, you know, by the record companies. And the Platinum Record Award was created because of the Inagata De Vida, the album. It was that big. They couldn't call it, you know, double gold. So they decided that they were going to change it, and they made it into platinum pretty much based on the sales of the Inagata De Vida album. The other thing I was going to tell you, if this is the other part you're talking about, is mm-hmm. the recording of that album, of that the song Inagata De Vida that I'm
right.
talking about.
Yeah.
Well, in the short version is the Iron Butterfly went to the studio in Long Island, New York, mm-hmm. to record. And when they got there, everything got set up, and the engineer said, you know, let's get some levels and this and that and the other. So the band started the Inagata De Vida, and they played the entire song. Drum solo, everything that was in it, they played it from top to bottom, front to back, and stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And the engineer said, well, come on in here and have a listen to this. And that's what you hear to this day, that very cut. One time, no coughing, no stopping, no somebody saying, hey, hang on a second, wait a minute, you're not supposed to play that. You know, no conversation. Nothing. They all did it in one pass and exactly like everyone has always heard it. That's what's so revolutionary about it, is that there was no stopping or conversation or somebody banged something or anything like that.
Well, you've been in a billion recording sessions. That never happens, does it?
What's that? When you just play straight
right.
like that with no interruption? Oh, no, never.
Boom.
No, ever. Well, because when people say, it's like saying, hey, Larry, you know, we need you to do a couple of things here on the, you know, a couple of advertisements or a couple of things. And you go through it, you know, it's let's just try it. Let's run it down. You're just practicing it. So you're not
right.
thinking about, well, this is going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, you're right. I mean, it doesn't, it happens, but it's very rare. But the thing is, you have to remember, is that Inagata De Vida is over 17 minutes long. We're not talking about a 2.5 minute song.
No.
You know, for 2.5 minutes, you might get through it without banging into something or you know, or changing the volume, but not for 17 and a half minutes.
No. And I hate to say this, that probably that side of the album was worn out in most record collections, and the other side was hardly listened to.
Right,
because
basically
Iron Butterfly were known for that one song, and there was nobody, no friend of mine in that time that did not own that album.
Yep.
It was, I mean,
and they were big.
They were
really big. Yeah.
So these two gentlemen joined Captain Beyond. Tell us how the whole Captain Beyond thing came about and how that basically
Well, Captain Beyond started. Captain Beyond started when Lee and Rhino contacted me and said that the Butterfly was going to be going on a permanent hiatus,
mm-hmm.
and that they would like to start a band. And so, you know, I was very happy playing with Johnny. And but there was some talk on my end, coincidentally, that Johnny might be taking some time off. I mean, he'd been playing, you know, for 2.5 years of just solid stress and pressure, you know, since he came on the scene and got discovered. So, I mean, he'd been, you know, getting pretty tired. And so we decided, when Johnny decided to take that respite, that I would go out there and we were going to see what we could do. And the three of us got together. And I had known Larry from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because Larry had also been hanging with the Allman Brothers, you know, in the early stages. And he ended up living up in Macon for a while. So I had known him, but we didn't have a singer. And they said, well, there's this singer that's used to be with Deep Purple that's living in L.A. now. And perhaps we can, you know, he's expressed some interest in doing something. And his name is Rod Evans.
Oh,
and
man.
So we all got together, and we hit it off really well. That's how it started.
You were telling me, too, there's quite a few musicians that have become, after the fact, great big fans of Captain Beyond.
It's amazing. I mean, really. I mean, you know, you do stuff, and you just sort of forget about it. It's not that you're not proud of it or, you know, that sort of thing. It's just it's something you did, and you start realizing then that every day I find more people, younger generation. People that I just got an email from another bass player from a very well known guitar player everyone would know, and
who is that?
He's a big fan, the bass player Glenn with Robin Trower.
Wow!
And all these people, you know, that you start finding out, it's strange, really.
Well,
It's not strange. Just one more thing. It's not strange because is anything strange about it per se. It's just strange because, as I said, you do something and you don't think, well, 30 years later, there's a whole lot of people, all kinds of people still listening to it. I mean, you go, geez, really? You know, so that's what I mean.
Well, and you'd even said that the guys from Kiss have become great big fans of Captain Beyond.
Well, it was so funny because Eric Singer, who's a really good drummer, and he sent me a really lovely email one day. I didn't know it was him, and then I started looking at his name, and I thought to myself, isn't this Eric Singer's name? This, you know, so he said he had mentioned or said something to Paul and Gene about Captain Beyond, and that they had been going all over YouTube to try to find stuff to watch or read about it or whatever. So it was pretty funny. Yeah, there's a few just people that you just don't realize, you don't know, and it happens.
We'd through the week that I had announced that you were going to be on with us tonight, I had received so many emails and people got a hold of me in regards to the Allman Brothers. And your friendship with the Allman Brothers and Dwayne, and being involved with the Fillmore East recordings—that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, the Allman Brothers, I had known of the Allman Brothers because we both grew up, 35, 40 minutes apart, and so, you know, when I really got to meet them was at a, not going to believe this, but at a Battle of the Bands.
Oh.
A Battle of the Bands in Gainesville, Florida. The band that I was in was a part of that. And that's where I really started to get to know them. And their first album had just come out. And so we became fast friends. And, you know, anywhere I was, anytime I ran into him, anytime. And at that time, right then, Larry, I was trying to get arrested. You know, I mean, I was trying to get a break.
Right.
And I was always hopeful for this group that I had, you know, started called Noah's Ark. But, you never know if that's going to happen. And so you have to look out for yourself as well. So I was hoping that, you know, I'd get a break at any time. And, you know, the curious part about it was I would talk to Dwayne or Greg on the road, and they'd be saying, yeah, well, we played with this band last night and such and such, but we'll keep our ear out for you. I mean, Dwayne was both of those guys, Greg and Dwayne, are just, I mean, they just couldn't do enough for me. I mean, they just couldn't do enough. And so after that story I just told you about the jam session that was really an audition, I was in New York, and I ran into the Allman Brothers at the hotel. And I remember Dwayne saying to me in the lobby, he goes, Fire, they always call me Fire. He goes, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm playing with Johnny Winter now. He said, you're kidding, you know, because he was that excited the fact that I had, you know, gotten a break, and it was really cute. And so from that time, I would play with them and then play with Johnny. And if Johnny was sort of off the road, you know, for a week or something, and the Almonds were out play, I'd go on the road with them because we just had so much fun doing it, you know. And I just played percussion and play a few songs like, you know, Midnight Rider and a couple of things, you know, on the kit, and then go back and play percussion. I was perfectly happy. I mean, we just had a great time.
What was the difference in atmosphere around the Allman Brothers versus the Johnny Winter and band?
Well, the Almonds were pretty much just like they are. I mean, mm-hmm. just kind of down home, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, how about let's have another beer type thing. and Johnny was that way too. It was, mm-hmm. You know, Rick and Randy and them are from Union City. I mean, so... Mm-hmm. You know, and Johnny's from Texas, and I was raised in Florida, so it wasn't that different. You know, it was a little bit different just because of people's backgrounds. But after about 10 minutes, it was all the same, pretty much. I'm going to tell you, Dwayne really. I mean, Greg will tell you now. I mean, he tipped his hat to Johnny. I mean, he knew that Johnny was a great guitar player and a great slide player. And, and we did a lot of, actually, Johnny Winter and when the Fillmore East, the Almonds live at the Fillmore East, we were headlining those nights. Johnny Winter and was the headliner. The Allman Brothers Band was under the headliner, and the Elvin Bishop Group, Elvin's band, was third on the bill. And so that was the night that they did those historic Live at the Fillmore East records. So we played a lot with them when I was with Johnny, and we played a lot with the Almonds when I was with Captain Beyond, because we were all on Capricorn.
I had heard the story, or I should say I had read the story in Bill Graham's book, that when the Allman Brothers would come to the Fillmore, that in their rehearsal, sound checks in the afternoon, he said that was really the only time he could walk out in the streets and see the shopkeepers and so forth, gathered out on the sidewalks listening to the Allman Brothers.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, and to this day, they rule that place. I mean, they just love them in New York. They always have. And you know, the curious thing is that some groups can't get arrested there. I mean, even if they're good, they just, it's just how it is. Captain Beyond was huge in Chicago. I mean, you would have thought we were Led Zeppelin there. I mean, truly. I mean, I'm talking about the musicians' respect, the fans. And there was other places that, you know, you just couldn't figure out why it was a sort of lukewarm response, or, you know, they ran you out of town, whatever. It was, you don't know why that is, but it is there.
Well, in my performing career of lecturing all over the country, that there is a difference in different parts of the country and how audiences do respond.
Most definitely.
And
I'm not sure there's any. I'm not sure that there's any. I mean, if you talk to Steven Tyler or mm-hmm. any of those people in Aerosmith, wherever they play, there's probably some places that they've played that they couldn't figure out why the people just weren't that responsive. I don't know. There's really no rhyme or reason for it. It's just there.
What was your favorite experiences between, I guess that's kind of a difficult question to ask, but overall, what
was
your favorite,
real tough.
Favorite experience? Would it be the Captain Beyond?
What's that?
Would it be the Captain Beyond? Was that your favorite time musically, or?
Well, you know, you interviewed Al Jardine not too long ago.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Yes, sir.
And I'll bet you if you asked Al about his time with the Beach Boys, the different time periods, you know, who was playing with them. Because mm-hmm. I saw the Beach Boy when Glenn Campbell was playing guitar with them.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah.
And, you know, Glenn Campbell being not only a great guitar player, but a studio session man par excellence. I mean, he's played on more records than you could count.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't even know they're listening to it.
That's right.
It's Glenn Campbell playing guitar. But if I bet you if you asked Al that same question, you know, there's great things about each sort of period, you know,
mm-hmm.
The different people you work with, even times that are unpleasant. You know, you look back fondly and say, God, you know, that was so great, you know, because of this. And I think, you know, all of it, even to this day, you
mm-hmm.
know, I still look on it all as it's a real joy and a pleasure to have done and been with these people that I've met so far. And I'm not finished yet. And
Hello.
To just, you know, to have known them and played, you know, in, with them and stuff. So it's a little bit of it in everyone, you know, in every experience.
What's on Bobby Caldwell's plate right now? What you got going?
I've got a couple of baked pork chops. And I've, oh, no, that's just, I'm sorry. That was silly. I couldn't resist that, Larry.
Kind of a cliche way to ask that question.
It's terrible. It's what's on my plate.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm in the middle of putting my own group together
mm-hmm.
and screening people for that. I'm also getting ready to do an album with this solo artist here in about 6 weeks, coming up in about 6 weeks, perhaps in Canada. I want to build. We're going to build a recording studio, and so there's a, you know, there's a little bit. We're going to do a box set on Captain Beyond. I'm told.
Wow.
So there's going to be the first album is going to be remastered with some bonus tracks of Rod singing that nobody's ever heard, and so we're trying to put that together, and. So there's, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, going on, and I think for me, the frustrating part is I wish it would go quicker. I mean, you know, sometimes you just things are happening and you can't force it. You just have to be patient, and I think sometimes that's the only part that I find difficult. But I've learned to be better about it. But you know, so it's all moving forward, you know.
That happens in the entertainment industry, whether you're making a movie or a record, or it's a process that the people have never been involved with it have no idea what's actually happens on something like that.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, you just all you can do is you try to put all the pieces together and then sort of let it, you know, awaken into this sort of living thing when it's ready to. It's very odd. You can't force it, and every time you try to, because you know you think you're doing the right thing, and something gets, you know, gets run off the rails or something.
Well, you know, we became friends because we both have a love for animals, and we haven't brought this up before, and this is something. I'm sure a lot of your fans do not realize, but you rescue animals. You told me that there's no way you could ever go into a pet shop because you'd have to take them all home.
Oh no, I can't go in there. I can't go into a pet shop. I mean, we love them so much that I mean, you know, my God, I'd have a petting zoo out here. It's almost that way now. I mean, with the stray cats and. You know, feeding them. And yeah, we do. We really love the animals. Tremendous. I mean, I've been to many international zoos when I can, you know, to just go out of my way to go to the zoo. I think it's wonderful. And I think it's fantastic that you do that work that you're doing and save them and help them out, and it's just wonderful, there just needs to be so many people like yourself, you know, taking care of these animals. It's very important.
I know, and for generations to come, we have to make sure that these wild places stay wild and that our children and their children will have a place to go, such as magnificent Rocky Mountain National Park, where you told me that you're planning on heading to here one day in Estes Park, Colorado.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Is that still going to happen, Bobby?
It is going to happen, and I understand there's some bears down that way.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, if you move to Estes Park, that will give me more incentive to come out. And I will I will personally give you a wildlife tour of that area.
Well, I think you remember when I told you, you have visions of like having been, in the mountains plenty of times. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Rick Derringer and I did the whole All-American Boy album up there in Colorado at the Caribou Ranch. And, I mean, I'm used to the mountains, but when you hear about the bears, strolling down the city streets or something like that, I'm thinking, man, well, what do you do now?
That's all blown out of proportion.
It's probably exact.
Yes, it's just blown out of proportion. It's, I have to tell you, we went to Rocky Mountain National Park for probably 20 straight years and never saw a bear. So.
That's great. I mean, I love them. I just want to know how am I supposed to act or say, hey, how's it going? Or, here, come here, let me scratch you there behind your ear,
Make lots of noise. They cannot see very well, but they hear everything and they smell everything. And I have told people that have hiked in the mountains that you probably were in the vicinity of either a mountain lion or a bear and you had no idea. They detected you and they were gone.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I'll probably just strap my drum set on or something and walk through there.
That'll work. We'd like to thank Bobby. We need a video of that. I see a YouTube video.
You can see a look on that, don't you?
Oh, yeah, that'd be fantastic. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, it'd be very inspirational. When you get in the mountains, you will have ideas. It seems like every time we go out there, it's like a creative mecca. I mean, ideas, you'll be amazed.
Mm-hmm.
I
can see the bears and the cougars putting their paws over their ears as I'm walking down the path.
Well, just carry a cowbell with you. That'll take care of the bears. We want to thank Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones for taking care of the animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Their number 317-243-0700. And also check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, or our new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy. You've had a chance to check that out, Bobby?
Yes, tremendous.
Thank you. It's lots of fun. There's lots of pictures on there, so I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Tremendous, beautiful pictures. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And how can you not take a bad picture of some of these magnificent animals? That's it. Well, it's a great pleasure, Bobby. Gosh, thanks for coming on so soon. It seems like the hour was way too short.
It's always my pleasure, Larry. I always enjoy talking music or animals or whatever with you, and the staff are wonderful, and it's really my pleasure,
Well, God bless you. I hope everything goes well for you. I'll keep in touch as I always do. I'll be calling you every once in a while to find out what's going on with Bobby Caldwell.
Absolutely.
We want to thank We want to thank all of our listeners. We also want to thank Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson, of course, Dr. Henry Day for the Wild World News, and gosh, have a great week, everybody. Next week on our show, David Klinger with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and we're going to be talking about some very interesting articles he's written about things that have been involved with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This is Larry Batson, and you have been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.